Well, anyway, so I thought I'd start off today with a little bit of trivia. Who, what, how was I going to word this? With this, a greatly celebrated day of happened of June in 2018. The most celebrated day in Texas, I think, is the way I've heard it said. Any thoughts? June of 2018. No takers. Well, you guys fail. That was the month Jared and Josie moved to Texas. but there's a little bit more to that story that I'm not sure. Maybe I've told. I don't know. I'm not sure if any of you guys have heard much of the story, but there was a bit of a debacle as we were moving. So as some of you are aware, the last couple of years of Josie's schooling, we decided we were tired of student loans. Or getting more student loans, so we bought an RV and moved into the camper, and that was our home. We did internships in the summer, pulled it back and forth, but this was the move. We bought a house in Texas, and we were headed down. So as we were getting ready, we set out to do it the right way. So it's a 35-foot fifth wheel. It's not, you know, anything special. In fact, it's pretty terrifically hard to look at. But I had two spare tires, and as we're getting ready for the trip, the plan for the trip was Josie actually had to be out in Midland initially, so we headed out together. But before we started, like I said, do everything right. So I threw two spares in the back of the truck, and we said a prayer, because this was a big deal for us, and then we hit the road. So everything went fine. We stopped and stayed the night at my brother's in the Dallas area, and then split paths in the morning, I think. Anyway, so we get on the road. I'm by myself. Josie headed out to Midland, and we ended up, I get a flat tire just north of Waco on the trailer. No big deal. I've got two spares. I was ready for this. Doing it right. So I pull over, change out the spare, notice that the tire's squatting a bit, and because I'm doing it right, I pulled to the next gas station, aired up the tire, 80 PSI, 10-ply tires. That's what the deal is. I've pulled trailers all over, 80 PSI. Get down the road, and I made it to about right around the Temple area, between Temple and Austin, blew another tire, and I'm starting to get nervous because I have one more spare. And I'll throw this in: I got one flat, and I was praying. I got the second flat, and I was really praying. Anyway, this happens another time, so we're just north of Austin, tire squatting like a good old boy. I pull up to the next gas station. Top off the tire, 80 PSI. Off down the road, made it to about downtown Austin before I blew out my last tire. And which downtown Austin is a little sketchy. I had my two dogs with us in the vehicle. So I was able to get off on an off ramp onto this little corner of a gas station. We sat there until in the morning. Things opened up. I got an Uber, went and got tires put on, came back, left the dogs in there. They got a bit hot, but they survived. And long story short, the tires were inflated properly. Everything was good to go. I swapped them on. Away we went, and we were home free. It wasn't until probably a couple of years later, I was moving the tires. I still had those tires. They were shredded. At my place, moving them around because they were, you know, just stacked in one area. And I don't know if I had a thought or if I just noticed, but I looked at the printing on the side of the tire. These were not 10-ply tires, they were 8-plies, and the max PSI was 65. So, believe it or not, while I was focused so much on doing everything right and trying to make sure that, you know, by the strength of my own wisdom, I was going to get the job done, I actually ended up overinflating the tires and causing my own problems. And I always liked that story. To me, even though I didn't enjoy it at the time, once I found out what actually caused the whole ordeal, and I survived, and we're, you know, only a few bumps and bruises. I thought that was probably a good lesson that I could work into a sermonette, and that's what I tried to do today. But I was kind of struggling with it. I worked with Job Engel, and that's kind of a beast. So I kind of let that set for a later date. But Josie and I have started watching this show called Alone. It's a wilderness survival show. They drop you off in Vancouver Island, British Columbia, and they just leave you there all by yourself until you call and get rescued. So they put quotes at the beginning, and this quote that popped up was by Robert Greene Ingersoll. Has anyone heard of Robert Greene Ingersoll? Mr. Mendez? Nobody else? Okay. So the quote goes, "In nature, there are neither rewards nor punishments. There are consequences." Which I thought that was interesting, so I kind of looked into it a little bit more, and I had looked into Mr. Ingersoll and what he's all about. Well, so as I do some digging, I come to find out who he is. Ingersoll is America's agnostic? He was a very, for his time, eloquent atheist. And there's a lot of quotes, which I'll just read a few of them. It starts from from less offensive to maybe a little bit more, but here's one. "The hands that help are far better than the lips that pray." Here's another one, says, "They say belief is important. I say no, actions are important. Judge by deed, not by creed." Like I said, this starts off pretty easy. You can see where he's coming from on some of these, and it's legitimate points. "There can be but little liberty on earth while men worship a tyrant in heaven." So now we're getting a little bit tougher. "Religion can never reform mankind because religion is slavery." We get to another one here. "Do you not know that every religion in the world has declared every other religion a fraud?" "Yes, we all know it. That is the time all religions tell the truth, each of each other." And then here's, this one's a little longer, but probably, you know, had some discussions with parents that were talking with their kids, wrestling with the, is there a God? And the statement was made, some of the stuff coming out of that kid's mouth made me want to stand back because I just knew God was going to strike him any moment. Well, so here's one of those. "Suppose, however, that God did give his law to the Jews and did tell them that whenever a man preaches a heresy or proposed to worship any other god, that they should kill him. Suppose that afterward the same God took upon himself flesh and came to this very chosen people and taught a different religion, and that thereupon the Jews crucified him. I ask you, did he not reap exactly what he had sown? What right would this God have to complain about a crucifixion suffered in accordance with his own command?" Which is, I don't know, that's a little bit, you could see why God would find that offensive. Well, anyway, so I kind of looked into, especially when you know, we start off at the top of the list, and some of it you can really kind of see. I looked into the man and read some of his history, and believe it or not, his father was a devout, I think Episcopal, they call it Congregationalist. So I found a little write-up about kind of the context of what made Robert Ingersoll. This is a quotation. "Through many years, the most noted of all American infidels," they wrote different back then, "Robert Ingersoll was born and reared in a devoutly Christian household. His father, John Ingersoll, was a Congregationalist minister and a man of mark in his time, a deep thinker, a logical and eloquent speaker, broad-minded and generously tolerant of the views of others. John Ingersoll's ministerial career was, in fact, substantially brought to a close by a church trial, which occurred when he was a pastor of a congregational church in Madison, Ohio, and at which his third wife appeared as a prosecutor. Upon this occasion, he was charged with prevarication, that's a big word, and unministerial conduct. The evidence adduced, trial was one of abiding traditions of the dull little town of Madison. It was one of the most trivial and ridiculous, the trial was one of trivial and ridiculous character, but the committee which heard it decided that though he had done nothing, and this is in quotations from the judgment, though he had done nothing inconsistent with his Christian character, he was inconsistent with his ministerial character and forbade him to preach in the future. He was demoted to an elder and went before the church authorities, where he was permitted to continue his clerical labors. However, he soon moved to Wisconsin, going from there to Illinois, where he died. This all happened when Robert was 9 years old. So you can see here he was, and it says, And it was the unjust and bigoted treatment his father received which made him the enemy first of Calvinism and later of Christianity in its other forms. So I thought that was, it provided some context that I thought was a little bit valuable. The way I saw it, as I read, it was clear that Robert recognized a glaring discrepancy between Christianity as he saw it, or what was practiced by the individuals around him, and being a good person. Discrepancies between religion and being righteous, and this is righteous as you and I would define it, and between obeying God's laws and receiving happiness. So, it is theorized that that rejection of his family that they experienced was similar in nature to what Christ faced by the Pharisees. The Pharisees and Calvinists both referred to and judged by traditions of men instead of the scriptures. If you would please turn to 2 Timothy 3 verse 1 for a scripture. Second Timothy 3 and verse 1. Starting in verse 1, but know this, that in the last days perilous times will come, for men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying its power, and from such people turn away. Dropping down to verse 14. But you must continue in the things which you have learned and been assured of, knowing from whom you have learned them, and that from childhood you have known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise for salvation through faith, which is in Jesus Christ. All Scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction, and righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, thoroughly equipped for every good work. That scripture in 2 Timothy is sobering when you realize that Robert Ingersoll became one of these. Namely, among others, but just from the information, he was obviously a blasphemer, which is listed in verse 2. As a reaction to the men's, as a reaction to the actions of men who called themselves Christian, behaving also as one of these. And I would highlight the terms headstrong and haughty from verse 4. His teachings then went on to inspire others to become one of these also, where you would quote almost the entire scripture, and I'll read. Men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despiser of good, ... And so the story goes. It seems to me that's kind of the world we're living in now. Now, Mr. Ingersoll lived in the late 1800s, and certainly he is not solely to blame. It's not that, you know, he's someone that people of that nature have been attracted to. They liked his perspective and kind of glommed onto him from that. But this is how Satan recruits. As in, you had Christians not behaving as Christians. Other prospective Christians looked at those Christians and said, I don't want any of that. And then they go out and find their own way, wise in their own eyes, and they say, take a following with them. That's how Satan recruits. That's how the deal works. So one could say that this is a portion of why our world is in the moral crisis that has contributed so much to the hardship that is around us today. If you could turn for the second verse to Acts 17, verse 11. It's always a reminder of why we need to go to the scriptures directly and why that's commendable. Here it's talking about the Bereans. They were like the Bereans in that they received the word with all readiness and searched the scriptures daily to find out whether these things were so. They didn't take anything on credit. They looked it up. They researched it for themselves. They proved it for themselves. So to conclude, I would make the statement that we need to be sure to measure all things against only the real true standard, the sword of truth, the bread of life, the Bible. But as we strive to stand strong, who put those three words in a sentence together? with the teachings of the Bible. Just remember that sometimes standing strong will look a lot like humility, as we often find out that we are to blame for our own hardships. Because if you hearken to the analogy, I, over-inflating the tires, was the Pharisees. I was the Congregationalist. And the poor tire was Mr. Ingersoll. So in the name of there but for the grace of God, go we. We need to be thankful for our calling and stay grounded in the scriptures.